Hello and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast, the last Tribcast in January 2011. I'm reporter Elise Hugh, joined by CEO and editor-in-chief Evan Smith.
Hello.
Managing editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
And Ben Philpott of KUT News and the Tribune.
I'm back to the bottom again.
Bottom of the introduction list. Sorry.
But the top of our affection list.
It must not be baseball season yet.
No, we'll get you.
Our four topics today, voter ID, it's the Senate. The budget and how it's relating to mental health, the Senate race for Kay Bailey Hutchison's seat, and my farewell to the Tribcast.
Oh, come on. I keep expecting you're going to pull like a Victoria Principal on Dallas thing for us, and the whole thing will have been a dream.
I don't even understand that reference.
Yes, see, Dallas, at least, was a TV show.
Oh. Before it was a city, Dallas was...
let's start, Ross, with you and voter ID. Doing just as we expected and passing out of the Senate Committee of the Whole along party lines.
Yeah, it's the third part of the trilogy here. In 2007, this thing stopped in the Senate. In 2009, this thing stopped in the House. And rather than have something happen at the end of the session like it did twice before, they've front-loaded it, put it in. Let's try it in January and see if they can stop it there. So it's flying through the Senate as we record this. It's going to kind of bonk in the House for a minute because the House hadn't named committees yet, has to clear a substantive committee, and then the calendar's
There's
committee.
No committee of the whole in the House.
Well, you can have one. They've generally only used them for investigations. They had a controller and a land commissioner in 1929. I had to look all of this up.
I'm about to say, God, hey,
holy cow,
hey, Poindexter, why don't you talk about some history with no notes?
Mr. Peabody here.
Yeah.
But they generally use them for impeachments and investigations and not for this. Wayne Christian actually proposed it when they were having the conversation over the rules in the House and said, we ought to do this in a committee of the whole just like the Senate is, and we ought to not allow any testimony. And he killed his own thing right there.
Well, that's a problem. They're never going to allow
that. You know, he had Republicans at the back mic saying, whoa, wait a minute, no testimony?
Yeah.
And they didn't put it in. So instead of a cow, they're going to do the regular thing. So the House will name committees at some point. They'll refer the bill to committee. They'll have hearings. It'll come out. It'll go through calendars. It'll go to the floor. I'd bet on March.
And the bill the Senate passed this session is actually stricter than what passed out of the Senate in 2009. It actually does require that your alternative forms of ID also have a photo on it, because previously
it was utility bills.
Yeah, utility bill, birth certificate, right, that doesn't have your ID.
So the idea was if you don't drive, then you've got to go get a picture ID.
Right. Now, here's the question. You know, Texas, like Georgia, is a state that's covered by the Voting Rights Act. So this has to be approved by the Justice Department and then has to pass court muster. The question on photo IDs is, if it's a state-issued photo ID, if it costs any money, you raise questions, inspectors, of poll taxes. If it's a free ID, then you raise problems with fiscal notes. It costs the Department of Public Safety some amount of money to do this, and this is a no-new-taxes session. It's kind of a funny thing, but it's hung on money.
I like that.
In previous sessions, they had proposed voter education initiatives that had small fiscal notes so that folks who weren't used to the new photo ID requirement could learn about it. And
right
now, because we're in this particular budget situation, that can't be happening.
That was one of the things that kind of got Republicans, or some Republicans, upset with Todd Smith's idea 2 years ago, was he had a what some thought was a too large education budget, education bill attached to it.
And it was perceived to be watering down the intent of the original legislation.
Right. It was also going to take like 4 years to implement instead of two.
Some of these are weird. I mean, it just seems like in a practical level, they could put something on your driver's license that said, you know, this is Ross Ramsey, he has to wear glasses, he's donating his kidneys, and yes, he can vote. You know, it ought to just, here's my photo ID.
On the current
driver's license. You know.
But again, it doesn't absolve people with no driver's license of producing a picture ID per elite.
Right.
And, you know, I'm really interested in the idea that if I read the language of the bill correctly, they're exempting old people.
Over 70 years old.
Right. But isn't the problem that looking for votes go nursing home mining or prospecting?
There is a problem with this. They had some legislation a couple of years ago. Steve Wallens, a former legislator, had some legislation that addressed this. But, yeah, mining nursing homes where you go in and you come out and you say, here's 30 votes for, you know.
Right. So why would they exempt what is obviously one of the problems?
Well, maybe, you know, with the budget cuts, most nursing homes will be shut down, and then
zing.
Well,
see, Philpott saved, because, you know, showing his teeth for your last podcast.
The answer to that is that they think they already have laws in place for that, and that the photo ID becomes a particular burden on people over 70 because they don't get out much. So you got to take a camera to them. You got to do all this other stuff.
Boy,
so,
the Democrats must feel like those people who got trampled at the Who concert. I mean, they're just getting run over.
Right. We're just smashed into the fence.
And this is
right.
probably the beginning of what's going to be a session-long experience for them, roughly akin to this, where, you know, just –
Right.
You're going to get feet on your face.
Watson this afternoon is Senator Democratic Senator of Austin, Kirk Watson, is adding an amendment this afternoon to make voter impersonation a felony. Because essentially Democrats argue and have argued all along that the idea of voter impersonation fraud, that I would take Evan Smith's registration card and go and say, I'm Evan Smith, and try and vote under his name, that's a phantom problem. And so, you know, Democrats, the extent of what they can do is add amendments like that, essentially making a statement about this so-called impersonation fraud.
But it's not going to stop the train from barreling down the tracks.
Right.
That's it.
No.
Right. I mean, I'm interested in this House thing, you know, the idea that it's going to take longer in the House, you know, when there's more time, but you never know what's going to happen.
Well, they're just not ready yet. You know, the way this is stopped, the way that was stopped 2 years ago was that the House didn't bring it to the floor until late in the session, and the people who were opposed to it were outnumbered, but they had time to, by slowing things down, to kill it.
Right.
You know, they pushed it past the deadline, right. basically. They killed three of the things, in fact, that are on the governor's emergency list. They killed eminent domain, they killed the sonogram bill, and they killed voter ID. So one of the reasons all these things are front-loaded is because of what happened last time.
All right, let's switch gears over to Ben and your latest reporting on the budget shortfall.
Yeah, you know, we always, I think we used to joke about looking forward to Emily Ramshaw's latest depression piece. And
you're Buzzkill Ben.
Yeah, now I'm Buzzkill Ben. you know, all the budget stuff is proposal. You know, I'm sure that more money somewhere will be added in and all this. But I went out talking to some mental health providers in the area and about what these kind of budget cuts mean to them. Talked to, there's an agency out of Round Rock that provides services for about 8 counties around Central Texas. Not Travis, but pretty much all the other counties that surround it. And they serve about 16,000 people with the 10% cuts, not even with the new budget proposals. They were already expecting to have to let 3,400 people off of their services. That includes, I'm going to get this number wrong, that includes 1,500 kids
wow.
who are getting services. And this is just one 8-county you know, mental health community provider.
What sort of services are we talking about?
Oh, gosh, everything from, you know, respite homes, kind of halfway, mental halfway houses, you know, getting people out of incarceration. You know, you have someone, I talked to one man who has a bipolar disorder, that kind of led to, exacerbated a drug addiction, led to jail. He was able to get into state hospital first, institutionalized, then into a respite home.
Some kind
through
of
this center,
care, basically, right,
and now he's you know able to have a job and try to work on things. He's been in rehab and then he's also working on the mental health issue of it. You know, things like that will be lost. Also, they already have a 500 person waiting list, and the reason they have a 500 person waiting list is because the other smaller you know nonprofits that work with them don't have the capacity to take those 500. Well, so they're going to get cut and have to not have services for 3,400 people. Those little service providers that already don't have room are actually going to, some of them are going to lose their own capacity. So you're going to have, you know, this influx of, and it in Austin, they've really done a good job of doing a lot of diversion programs. They have people that are in jails and emergency rooms so that when somebody comes in and they're obviously not you know, just drunk or just high on drugs, they're having a mental crisis, they've got people there to immediately evaluate and make sure that that person doesn't spend the night in the drunk tank, but spends the night somewhere else where they can actually get help.
And then, of course, upstream from this, where you see the problem then balloon is that a lot of the folks who are going to go get treatment from these facilities and now can't are going to end up in jail.
Right.
They're going to end up in county jails. Yeah. Brandi Grissom's reporting on this has scared the hell out of me, frankly,
right.
that the county jails are the simmering cauldron of people who should be in mental facilities, but because we're going to cut those, they end up in county
lockup. This happened in the 80s. This right. happened in the 80s when we deinstitutionalized mental hospitals and mental homes at the state schools and state hospitals at the time. When they deinstitutionalized a lot of patients, the first thing that happened was an increase in street people in some of the bigger cities, Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, and Austin. The second thing that happened was county jails. And, you know, it's kind of a, you know, there's part of that population that's a continuum. You know, where are you going to institutionalize them or put them in community services? What's going to happen with the budget, you know, here and in other things as we go along, is right now we have these books, these massive books that are just piles of numbers, and you sort of rehumanize these things. I mean, you look at these stories and you say, well, what does that mean, $3,000? Well, what does that mean, $1 billion? What does that mean in terms of how many kids are not eating lunch or are going to school or how many teachers per kid?
Yep.
All of these things start to sort of, you get back down to the program level and you go, okay, now this is what this means.
This is real, right?
That's right? And this is what legislators are going to hear. I mean, this, you know, this really is part of the process. This is where they go from the sort of the generality of the campaign, I think we should cut this stuff. Everybody pretty much agrees with that, to the specifics of, okay, now wait a minute, that means this is going to happen to Timmy and this is going to happen to Julie, and you know.
And this will be a recurring conversation.
Well, right. And to give you a preview of the depression I may bring next week, I'm visiting a nursing home in Trinity, Texas on Friday, which has 86, 89 patients there. Only 16 of them are private insurance. That one could be cut, could be just shut down. Yeah, because of the cuts. If they are shut down, the people have their closest next option, which may not have enough beds. Their closest next option is 40 miles away to the north. That one also is possibly slated for closing. The next option then is 30 miles to the south again. And, you know, the beds that are open, my guess is with cuts in reimbursement rates,
right,
they're going to take those 16 private insurance patients first before they think about the Medicaid, Medicare patients that are there.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, sorry.
So, thanks a lot, Ben.
I know.
Anybody have something on clowns?
Right. Those are fun. All right, let's go to Evan's topic and the cast of characters. Speaking of clowns, I'm just kidding.
Clowns scare me.
One of those, huh?
The cast of characters that's going to wind up running for KBHSC.
Well, it's an expanding list. You know, you now have something like 6 or 7, and you're probably going to get a couple more. There are rumors of even more who have not been on the big list that we've all been keeping that we may get into race later. But the one I want to talk about is the big one, and that's the lieutenant governor. We published a guest column this week by Evan Van Ness, who is the blogger otherwise known as Rick Perry versus the World.
Okay.
And his supposition, not exactly an original point, but I thought well articulated, is that David Dewhurst is not inevitable as the next U.S. Senator from Texas because the dynamics of the political environment right now don't necessarily work to his advantage. His money works to his advantage. His name ID works to his advantage. His visibility in the midst of all these policy discussions over the last several sessions works to his advantage. But working to his disadvantage is the roiling, simmering mess that is the Republican Party right now from the standpoint of which wing is in the driver's seat. And Evan's position, the other Evan's position is that the Tea Party threat to Dewhurst is more of a Marco Rubio-style threat to Charlie Crist than Dewhurst would probably be comfortable with. And that if Dewhurst doesn't watch out, he will be painted quickly by these folks, the potential exists, as an unauthentic conservative. Isn't it?
Well, we know Dewhurst is no man of the people. You know, am I allowed to say that? I just
sure. You're leaving.
It is your last podcast. We're going to throw you under the bus by tomorrow.
Then she left the state.
I mean,
it's okay, Governor. She's not going to be voting.
Mike Walls, call me.
He obviously has ranch land and rides horses and all that stuff. In fact, competes, but. I'm not sure that he. Well, we know he doesn't mow a lawn or anything like that.
I don't know.
In a condo.
One difference between Dewhurst and Crist is that Crist has sort of been a moderate, and Dewhurst hasn't. I mean, you know, Dewhurst. You know, whatever you can say about Dewhurst, is he hadn't come from the moderate part of the Republican
Party.
No
question. The issue is not the reality; it's the suspicion.
Right. And the people that are pushing in that direction. I think this has less to do with whether somebody's a moderate and a conservative than with someone's an establishment Republican, which I think Dewhurst probably is, or an anti-establishment Republican, which describes some of the Tea Partiers. If you're in here yelling at the people who've been running the show so far and let's throw those guys out and put in new guys, that's a problem for the guys who are in now, including Dewhurst.
Well, you know, I was thinking that it might be interesting to see how the Tea Party and the, if you want to say, moderate side of the Republican Party play in this race differently when you don't have a Rick Perry around. You know, the assumption, a year and a half ago, was that Senator Hutchison was going to walk in and win the governor's race because Perry's base was too small. Well, he expanded it to the Tea Party and everyone else in the Republican Party and beat Kay Bailey. I wonder if someone like Dewhurst, who doesn't, you know, has not shown on the campaign trail that ability to capture the imagination and campaign like Governor Perry, maybe has trouble pulling together pulling all the strings that he needs to, and you know, maybe a moderate who does a better job than Senator Hutchison did on the trail could win the Senate race.
But would that be?
I don't know.
And that's part of the issue, because the people who are more to the Dewhurst wing of the party,
right.
Dewhurst will hate that, by the way, are Roger Williams and Tom Leppert, the kind of business conservatives.
Sure.
It's a hard thing for a business conservative to just win a race going away these days.
I think Dewhurst has some tricks here that you guys aren't recognizing. I mean, one of them is, you know, the TFRW, the Texas Federation of Republican Women. Dewhurst has been an angel for those guys for a long time. You know, there's always a yellow rose at the beginning of their convention for everybody who's in that thing. He's been working this stuff for a long time. He was a funder of the party before he ever ran for land commissioner. He was, you know, he's been in the trenches for a long time.
He was Valley Lawmaker of the Year like 2 years in a row.
Mr. South Texas, that's right. So he's going to do the thing in, I think McAllen has a thing that's like that. I can't remember what it's called, but he's got something like that coming this year. He's done some work here that frankly Leppert and Williams haven't done, Roger Williams haven't done. Right. The interesting thing here is that there are a couple of populist candidates. You know, Michael Williams is a populist candidate. The guy gets in front of a crowd and the crowd goes crazy. I mean, it's sort of an interesting thing. And if we get a Senate race, we haven't had one for a while, but if we get a U.S. Senate race in Texas where people are actually paying attention to it on something like the level of attention that they give to the governor's race, you see a Michael Williams, you see a David Dewhurst, there's a contrast there.
It's a dynamic. Look, I think Dewhurst is the front runner. There's no question about that. And the odds on favorite to be the next senator. But the question is it a lock? Nothing's a lock.
Right. Well, and the other question, and this is actually what makes this sort of fantasy baseball fun, is it's an open Senate seat. This doesn't happen very often. And you could have a gazillion candidates you haven't even heard from yet. This rich guy, this rich lady, you know, whoever.
What about the Democratic side? Doesn't even matter since.
Well, the two names that have come up are retreads, for better or for worse. They've both been on the ticket before, John Sharp and Chris Bell. Bill White was going to be a candidate 15 months ago, ran for governor, decided he's had enough, he's not going to run. So those are the two Democrats at the moment. You know, I suspect we'll see some.
All right. Well, this is my final Tribcast after something like more than 60 episodes. Headed off to the dark side.
What are we going to do?
I'm
going to
do my time in Washington, D.C.
What are we going to do? I mean, I'm already
I did want to say
bumming seriously.
Well, the biggest response after I tweeted out that I was headed to D.C. was, "What happens to the Tribcast?" So, which is interesting because we really keep thinking that there's about three listeners out there.
So all three.
There are at least
all three of them called you, huh?
But I did want to share that we're going to have our favorite Tribcast substitute, Reeve Hamilton, take over as kind of producer along with Todd to make sure that it gets up on the site and gets on iTunes every Thursday as usual and keep the conversation going. It's been a delight, a whole lot of fun, and you can always email me at ehugh@texastribune.org if you have a message, at least until the middle of February and before Evan cuts off my email.
We should have a string quartet playing behind this, some sort of melancholy thing, right?
Well, we just sing Happy Trails, right. Actually, no. The three of us.
Please don't sing.
You always have a guest spot. When you come back to Austin, we will slide you in. You will be the permanent guest.
Yes, well, thank you, because we are going to stay in public
media. Would
her
name be mentioned after mine, though?
Yes, you would no longer be last.
Sorry, got to the bottom of the heap.
It's always about you, isn't it?
But no, thank you, guys. Thanks for listening. I've run into folks like Larissa Lindsay, who she and her husband sit and make it a habit to listen to the Tribcast every Sunday night before they go to bed. And so people like you we just appreciate.
Save his marriage.
So thanks again, a big shout out to all of y'all listeners. And stay with us. Tribcast will continue without a pause next week. So on behalf of Evan, Ross, Ben, and our producer Todd, for the last time, this is Elise. Thanks for listening.